Again, with any Dharma discourse, please again reflect that the sole purpose of receiving a Dharma is to become a fully enlightened being. The sole purpose of becoming a fully enlightened being is not that one single solitary person, which is ourselves, can be free from suffering and free from the uncontrolled, reincarnations and all the sufferings that come along with that, such as old age, birth, and death. That all sentient beings, regardless of who they are, whether we know them or not, close or far, whether they are, in any of the six realms, all sentient beings wish to be free from suffering. All sentient beings wish to be free from harm and unhappiness, and wish to be completely, in peace and happiness and harmony. Like ourselves, they also wish the same. Since we are one and they are many, it would be more, logical, would be more better if we can take care of the masses as opposed to one, which is ourselves. Therefore, we should want to become a fully enlightened Buddha in order to free all sentient beings from their subtle and gross physical, mental, and sufferings of the mind. All sufferings, gross and physical, gross and rough, and also sufferings of the body, speech, and mind. And for this very reason, I need to become a fully enlightened Buddha. Therefore, I shall listen to the practices and methods as taught by Lord Buddha, who achieved full enlightenment 2,500 years ago. Please develop such a motivation. His Holiness, the great 13th Dalai Lama, Gyalo Thubten Gyaltso, the great, great 13th Dalai Lama, who is the emanation of the 1,000-armed Avalokiteshvara, states in his sermon at the Great Prayer Festival, We do no spiritual practice for a day. Days and months and years pass like that, and as soon as an empty life has passed, then death catches us by surprise. We hold our head in sorrow and clutch at our chests in fear, but by then it is too late to change. We do no spiritual practice for a day. Days, months, and years pass like that, and soon an empty life has passed. Then death catches us by surprise. We hold our heads in sorrow and clutch at our chest in fear, but then it is too late to change. As said here, most of us pass our entire lives without ever getting around to spiritual training, the source of generating the eternally beneficial are beneficial within the mind stream. Morning, afternoon, evening, and night pass like that, and soon a complete day has gone. However, it does not merely pass into nothingness, for the mind, when not tempered by spiritual training, quickly accumulates negative habits, and this causes the body and speech to fall under influences of negativity. Thus, a day passes in the service of darkness, days become months, and months become years, a lifetime soon evaporates in this way, with spiritual thoughts becoming as rare as a star at noon. Then one day, the face of death appears before us. The elements of the body begin suddenly to dissolve and our limbs lose their power of motion. Our mouth dries and a dreadful sense of thirst sets in. We want to speak, but we haven't the strength to give voice to a single word. A strong sense of the vanity of our life wells up within us, and regrets at our failures and shortcomings arise. Filled with apprehension, we clutch at our chest in fear and call out to the object of refuge for help. However, although we once held in the palm of our hands the opportunity to benefit both this and future lives, we threw it away. Now it is too late to do anything. Our life has passed in negativity, and there is nothing at this late date that the refuge can do to save us from the karmic patterns that ourselves have woven. The power of the refuge objects and the power of the karma of living beings are equal. If during our whole life we accumulate only negative karma, there will be no value in calling upon the refuge object at the time of death. What the refuge object can do is to guide and inspire us in spiritual training during our lifetime. In particular, the refuge objects of the Dharma or the teachings must be learned and internalized during our life. Then at death, it automatically benefits. But it is simply wishful thinking to live in ignorance and negativity, avoiding spiritual practice and pursuing only materialistic goals. Then at the time of death, to hope for a savior. At the time of death, to hope for a savior. This was illustrated by the story spoken by His Holiness Gyalo Thubten Gyaltso, Mundre Chodak. He was greatly admired for his charisma and intelligence, and everyone constantly praised him. Eventually, the people of his village elected him as their chieftain. However, he only used his position of power for his own personal benefit, and as a result, his positive qualities became causes of negative karma. One day, he became very ill and realized that he was dying. At the time, he was lying on a bed in a corner of his room with the sun shining in on him. One of his admirers entered the room and, seeing him lying there, jokingly said, "Everyone praises you for your intelligence, but it isn't very clever of you to sleep in the sun when you have a high fever." Mandrachada replied, "All my life everyone has only praised for me. Now my life is almost finished, but when I look back over the years, I can see that I have done everything with it except practice the Dharma. Now the day of my death has come before me, but when I analyze my accomplishments, I cannot find anything of any significant meaning. Everyone praises my intelligence, but am I not the greatest fool in the three worlds?" Most of us are very much like Mandrachada, passing our lives in a sphere of meaningless activities, being deceived and misguided by flattery and materialistic allurements. With our heads thus turned in the wrong direction, very little of what we do produces anything positive and worthwhile. Therefore, we need a guru to help us to keep our mind in focus, a spiritual friend who is able to point us in the right direction, someone who can keep us on the pure path leading to the higher states of being and even to perfect enlightenment. If you have found such a spiritual friend, regard him as an emanation of the Buddhas, cultivate unfeigned confidence in him, meditate on the extraordinary kindness that the guru can perform and on the many ways in which he benefits the living beings in the world. Constantly maintain awareness of the values of the guru to one's life and respond correctly in body, speech, and mind. The disciple who pleases the guru by making the offerings of intensely practicing the teachings gains the inspiring blessings of the Buddhas of the past, present, and future. The Kadamba master Gishish Sungju Rinpoche wrote in his advice a very, very condensed version of the guru devotion, which is excellent. "We have taken rebirth again and again from time without beginning, but have not yet achieved liberation. This indicates that we have never met with a guru, or if we've met with one, did not recognize him. Or even if we met with and recognized the guru, we did not respond with skill. Thus we continue to wander in samsara. These days there are many qualified masters whom we can meet and recognize. Do not run to many, rather search for one qualified master with whom you have a strong connection. Then having found him, devote yourself correctly without giving thought to the worldly considerations." Also, Geshe Sungju's advice to us is also the 10 modes of correctly relying on the Guru is as follows. Relying by means of unattached generosity. Rely by means of stainless special attitude. Rely by means of unclouded wisdom. Rely by means of respect free from pride. Rely by means of unhesitating service. Rely informally and without stiffness. Rely patiently without short-temperedness. Rely sincerely without hypocrisy. Rely with divine pride free from the mundane vision. Follow the example set by the youthful Bodhisattva Sudana, the constantly weeping Sara Prarudita, Atisha, Lama Dromdompa, and Chengawa. Befriend the Guru and stay tirelessly with him. Then whether or not you formally study, you will automatically generate spiritual qualities like a cloth wrapped around incense. Naturally absorbs the aroma of the incense. Carefully guard your relationship with your Guru as you would guard a precious gem. First, one must realize the sufferings of samsara. One must realize the sufferings of samsara are constant in subtle forms and also in gross forms. It is there constantly, whether we recognize it or not, and we are living in it constantly, we have lived in it constantly, and we'll be living in it constantly in the future. There is no end to it. At present, our situation might be a little bit pleasant, but there is no certainty, there is no surety, there is no guarantees that it will remain this way. It can become better, it can become worse. And examining our daily activities, we can probably conclude that it will become worse. Therefore, while we have the precious opportunity, time, the teachings, then we should definitely, meditate on the three lower realms. Meditate on the three lower realms and realize that all sentient beings are in one's own same predicament. Realizing that all sentient beings are in one's own same predicament, and one has to die realizing the impermanence of the situation and also the uncertainty of the situation of samsara and life in general, one feels great compassion and one feels great love and one feels great pity for all sentient beings who, unlike oneself, has not met across the Dharma and is not able to realize their sufferings and there realize that there's a cessation and realize that there's a path and therefore wandering blindly in samsara. Feeling great pity for them, one, as all sentient beings, as the object, as the motivation, takes refuge in the three jewels. After taking refuge in the three jewels, one has full confidence in a superior enlightened Buddha, has confidence in the superior enlightened speech of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the superior enlightened representatives of the Buddha, or the ambassadors, the holy Sangha. Therefore, one realizing that three jewels are the only ones that can actually free us from this fear of samsara, free us from all this uncertainty, one looks for a qualified guru that one has one affinity to. One serves the guru well in body, speech, and mind. The lowest of the three services would be material service, giving things that the guru might need, require to continue. That is the lowest of the service. The medium service is serving by your physical body, which is washing and cleaning and sweeping and any kind of service that you can do physically for your guru. The best and number one, and also the service that we aspire to, is a service and the offering of one's dharma practice to the guru. So out of the three, the best one, the superior one, and the one that is supreme would be offering one's dharma practice to the guru. So if one is taking refuge correctly and therefore avoiding the 10 non-virtues, that is serving the guru correctly. If one is applying the four opponent powers and purifying negative karmas, one is serving the gurus correctly. If one is reading the Dharma scriptures and thinking about them, contemplating on them well, one is serving the guru correctly. If one understands the scriptures, reads the Dharma, and makes time for them, and applies it into one's life, and tries to change and modify one's behavior, that is the best service to the guru. Why is that the best service to the guru? The guru's motivation, or the teacher's motivation, is to free you from samsara completely. There is no other motivation. Therefore, if you do all the activities that take you out of samsara, that free you from samsara, of course the guru is going to be very happy and very, very pleased. Therefore, the true service, the real service, the best and the supreme one can offer up to the Buddhas and one can offer up to the gurus would be one's supreme dharma practice. And dharma practice, not in just reciting mantras and attending talks and also doing prayers and making offerings, but the real service of modifying one's behavior, transforming one's behavior, and changing one's behavior. A sign that one's dharma practice is sincere, is taking root, and true respect for the teacher would be modification of one's behavior. If one modifies one's behavior and one starts to change daily on one's behavior, that is a true sign of a dharma practitioner, that is a true sign of service to the guru, that is a true sign of faith. If one does not modify one's behavior and one continues on but does all the outer trappings of making offerings and attending teachings and also giving money and sponsoring, those are all the outer trappings. That is not what the guru or the teacher or the Buddhas are looking for. The Buddhas, the teachers, the gurus are looking for a modification, a transformation, and eventual destruction of one's defilements. So if one applies complete modification or modifying one's behavior, that is a true service to the guru. That is a supreme service to the guru. And there is no service more worthwhile than that. You can work 100 years, 200 years, 300 years in serving, washing, cooking, and following the guru and doing everything you can physically for the guru. But if you spend just one or two days in modifying your behavior and changing your behavior, for example, if one steals and one lessens that and eventually eradicates that, that would be even better than one or 200 years of physical service to the guru. If one was to give millions and millions and millions of dollars to the guru, or if one was to pull out the four viciousness of the speech, then if one was to root out the four negativities of the speech and lessen that and make the speech more cultivated, kinder, and less harming, that practicing that one or two days would be better than offering millions and millions of dollars to the guru. Why? It is because on the basis of modifying one's behavior, again, in accordance with the 10 non-virtues to be avoided, if one modifies one's behavior, one will collect all the necessary karma and imprints to get all one needs in this life and all future lives. Therefore, if you were to offer $1 million to the guru, compared to modifying your behavior, modifying the behavior will have greater benefits because you collect greater merits toward enlightenment. Having wealth is one of the aspects of enlightenment, one of the aspects that we don't concentrate. It's a side benefit. So if we change and modify our behavior, and we transform our behavior without having to do rituals of wealth, without having to do rituals of health, without having to do rituals of harmony, we will get health, long life harmony, dharma wisdom, understanding, and also advancement in our meditation. If we do not modify our behavior and we do rituals we do pujas and we do mantras and we have altars and we make offerings, it is of no use. It is of no use because whatever good merits you have collected by doing offerings and service to your guru, once one of the 10 non-virtuous acts arise and one, act upon it out of the 3 delusions such as anger and hatred, then immediately the good actions have been nullified, have been completely cancelled out. It is like giving $50 to your friend and afterwards having a big argument and then they don't like you anymore. So if you did something good to them and they needed something, you gave it to them and then they were very happy, they were very pleased with you. Right after that, you have a big argument with them and you become enemies. Then it nullified the act. In fact, they'll return the money and say, I don't want it, don't talk to me anymore. So if one was to do positive actions and then immediately do negative actions, you would collect merit and then nullify it, collect it and nullify it, collect it and erase it. What is the use? What is the purpose? The purpose here, what we should aim for, is to increase positive activities based on holding the avoidance of the 10 non-virtuous acts, 3 of the body, 3 of the mind, and 4 of the speech. When we start modifying that and we combine that with doing positive actions, therefore, there will definitely be a change in our lives, a change in our situation, a change in the relationship with other people, with our families, with our wealth, with our jobs. In fact, happiness and peace will really come. If we find that happiness and peace in future lives are important, we should put that much importance onto it. It should reflect in our daily practices. If we do not find that it's important, then we can continue the way we're continuing now. But as always, one should be ready for the consequences. As always, one should be ready. Because as always, there will be not a punishing God or a punishing Buddha or a deity or a wrath protector that comes to slice your head off or anything like that. But the retributions or the repercussions of karma are very strong, sure, and swift. The only virtue of negative karma is that it can be purified. That is the only virtue. Otherwise, there is no virtue for collecting negative karma. I will become a fully enlightened being. I will work for the sake of the majority as opposed to one. Any logical person would pick the majority. Like that, for this reason, I will cultivate the relationship between my holy guru and myself. If I have committed any acts that are positive and excellent in service and material or in practice towards my guru, I will not boast, I will not talk about it, I will not show off, but I will rejoice in my mind and dedicate it that I may become a fully enlightened being. Any transgressions that I may have with my guru, may I swallow my pride and ignorance, and may I swallow my old habits and apologize and sincerely confess, and to make amends with my guru, who is the one that shows me the Dharma teachings. And then after that, to meditate on the 3 lower realms, impermanence and death, take refuge daily, and to study the Dharma, and also do one's prayers and meditations and offerings such as mandala, vajrasattva, prostrations, and water offerings. That would be very, very beneficial. If we can combine that practice together with our work, with our family life, then our life is very fulfilled, our life is very balanced, our life is very, no gaps left. So therefore, we should take some time out from our social life. We should take some time out from our idle life. We should take some time out from our free time and take some time out and make the time to put some effort toward modifying our behavior, doing offerings and prayers and mandalas and vajrasattvas, and also serving our teachers by practice to the best of our abilities. And also, most important, to modify our behaviors, to transform the actions of our body, speech, and mind based on, again, the avoidance of the 10 non-virtuous acts. And that would make our life very, very fulfilled, very, very easy. How we would like to do that, what way we'd like to do that, that is our choice. If we'd like to do that through the Nyingma tradition, the Kagyu tradition, the Sakya tradition, the Gelugpa tradition, the Theravada tradition, the Hinayana tradition, the Mahayana tradition, the Tantrayana tradition, it doesn't make one difference. It doesn't make one, right or wrong. It is all correct. It is all perfect. But remember, the essence of all Dharma practice, whatever labels and names we may put on it, is the modification of one's behavior, the transformation of one's negative states, the transformation of one's delusion into positive states, on a daily basis, adding up to weeks, adding up to months, and when we look back over the years, we have become a better, improved, and much more positive person. If we do this, definitely we are a Dharma practitioner. Definitely we are a religious person without having to change the outside appearance. Inside, we become a very excellent, wonderful religious person that is balanced, that has a purpose in life, that will be peaceful, that will be happy, that will be able to deal with the problems that arises daily, because the nature of samsara is problems. The nature of existence is problems. The very fact that we have this body of skin and flesh and bones will create problems. So the very nature of existence is problems. Therefore, if the very existence or the very nature of existence is problems, when problems arise, why should we be surprised? We should take it with a pinch of salt. We should take it and realize that since samsara's nature is unhappiness, is suffering, when there is any happiness and suffering, when there is any happiness and peace, we should be surprised. When there is suffering and unhappiness and disharmony, we should not be surprised. We should not be surprised at all. It is the nature of the existence we live in. Therefore, realizing that, understanding that, we become calmer, we can become more gentler, and we realize that anything good happens, we should be surprised. Anything negative happens, there should be definitely no surprise. No surprise at all. And we take everything calmly, all negative actions as a result of our karma from previous lives. Therefore, not react back in a negative way, which will create further negative karma to create further negative situations. And then anything positive happens, we should rejoice and try to act on that and try to do more positive things. Remember, there are defiled types of happiness and defiled types of ways, and they are undefiled. Undefiled is pursuing happiness, relaxing, enjoying, having food and having tea, etc., based on an undefiled mind, based on a mind that is not attached. Whereas when we go out and we think that it's seemingly a neutral affair, such as we go out, we go to a party, or we go to a dinner, or we go to a dancing place, and then we just relax. Actually, that in itself may look like a pretty neutral ground or neutral field. Actually, it is a ground for a lot of negative karma. For example, if we go out, just relax and enjoy, okay, but we should also do it on the basis of not harming others. For example, when we get together with friends at dinner or whatever, not to slander others, not to gossip about others, not to say things that hurt or damage others. That is very, very important. So we can do these kind of activities, make sure that they're done without defilements, make sure they're done without harm, make sure they are done on the basis of, if possible, neutrality, neutrally, without harming other people. We can go for a walk, but if we go for a walk with a friend and gossip and say negative things about other people, that is not very nice. We can go for a walk for the sake of, oh, I need to keep my body fresh and light and keep up my health, therefore I can practice the Dharma, therefore I can benefit sentient beings. Then that walk becomes a Dharma action, a positive action. Therefore, it's the motivation is very, very important. Very, very important. Then, once the place of meditation, if possible, if it is convenient, then one should have a very pleasant and one should have a very nice altar according to one's financial capacity, to the best of our ability. One should have this at home, which is an object for us to make offerings, or merit field. As a symbol of the body of the enlightened ones, at the center of the altar, place an image of Buddha Shakyamuni, the monk who became the fourth universal teacher of this auspicious world cycle, set forth the vast and profound Dharma that has spread throughout the world and come down to us today. So in the center, one should have Buddha Shakyamuni himself. Then, to the right of this image, his right, your left when you face the altar, to the right of this image should be a Buddhist scripture. Any Buddhist scripture in any language, in any size that you like, to symbolize the enlightened speech of the Buddha. And to his left, one should place a stupa or a choten. One should place a stupa or a choten, which is any tradition that you like. It is here. One should place a stupa or a choten, which represents the enlightened mind of the Holy Buddha, the enlightened mind. And inside the stupa, if there's a place to fill it, it should be filled like this one. It should not be empty. The ones you get in Malaysia, I think most of it is not so hollow. You have a little place you open up inside. There's a little bowl that you can put things. In that, you should put precious substances of your personal guru, your precious teachers, or if you don't have any specific teachers or anything, then you can get precious items such as a cloth from a robe or a hair or something from a high monk or a high guru or a high teacher to put in there to symbolize the mind of the Buddha, the holy mind of the Buddha, which is actually your guru, should be placed on the altar.
Mm-hmm.
This stupa, or this pagoda in Chinese, or choten, we say in Tibetan, choten, stupa, can be any tradition. It could be a Tibetan tradition, it could be a Thai tradition, it could be a Burmese tradition. No difference. Don't think, oh, we have to get the Tibetan tradition. No, a stupa is a stupa. Any tradition that you like, as long as there's a stupa there. These are the basic items you should have on your altar. And in front of that, if it is possible, in front of the Buddha, one should have a holy photo or an image or a representation of one's guru, one's root teacher or teachers. One should have there, like here. Then, along with that, you can have any, in addition to the Buddha image, one may place images of the various bodhisattvas such as Maitreya, such as Manjushri, Tsongkhapa, gurus of the lineage, Tara, Medicine Buddha, Zambala, any other deities you can put together, so long as they are wisdom deities or enlightened beings, not worldly protectors, so long as they're not worldly protectors. If you have worldly protectors such as ancestral tablets or such as house gods or local gods, you can have those. No one says that you cannot. You can have those, but they should be, if possible, separate from your Buddhist altar, because their level of realization and the Buddha's level of realization is quite different. Out of deep respect for the level of Buddha's realization, one should have it separately, if convenient at all. If it is not convenient, then one can place that on the bottom of the altar, or one can place it to the side of the altar, where you can put Buddha perhaps on the left, a little bit raised, on a raised dais, and to the right, then the ancestor tablet, whatever. Best to put separately. If not possible, then you do it like so. So one should have the basics, the Buddha image in the center, Buddha Shakyamuni. As I mentioned 2 days ago, any material, any substance, any size. Of course, the better the material, the better for your merits, according to your financial capacity. And the bigger the size, the nicer also. And also to offer gold on its face, to offer gold on its body, to offer jewelry onto it would be very auspicious. Very, very auspicious for creating wealth, spiritual wealth, creating destruction of miserliness, and creating spiritual realizations, seeds for that. And also, so to the center is Buddha. To the right of this image, to the right would be the Buddhist scripture. To the left would be the stupa. So please keep that in mind. In addition to that, any other deities. You can have any other deities with that. You can have Kuan Yin, whatnot. Because Kuan Yin and Buddha actually are the same mental continuum, Buddhas. So no difference, Amitabha, any other Buddhas you can put, the more the better, and you do not have to put a separate offering for each. You do not. You can have one joystick or incense holder for all of them, because as I said yesterday, the Buddha's not going to punch each other and fight with each other and pull each other's hair out, fighting for offerings, water and incense and flowers, and complain to each other. They are much more higher than that. So one should put out beautiful sets of offerings, which we'll learn today. In front, one set. Now, if you have an ancestral tablet, or you have offerings for the local deities or the house deities, then those offerings should definitely be separate. They should be, you cannot share the same joystick offering and all that with the Buddhas and them, because their level is quite different. So, those should be definitely separate. And then you can move the statues anytime. You can clean the statues anytime. Make 3 prostrations, as I taught yesterday. And with respect and clean hands, one can move the images, dust well, and put it back. For any reason, during your cleaning, if the glass breaks or the image breaks or something gets chipped, no worries, no superstitions. The Buddha cannot be broken, the Buddha cannot be damaged. If it's done by accident, how can there be any negative repercussions? There is no danger to that, and there is no fear to that. So one can move it back and forth, and one should clean it. If possible, to put a nice clean glass case over the Buddha images so that dust doesn't collect and make them black and very dirty. That's not very good either. It's a sort of neglect, actually. And if one is not able to have an altar for any reason or of such, it doesn't matter. One can visualize the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. One can visualize it well. It doesn't mean that you are not a Buddhist. It doesn't mean you are not good. For any reason, you cannot make offerings. That is fine. Don't worry about that. The offerings can be mental. As we learned in Guru Jetsongkhapa's inner offering, when you visualize them in your heart and all pleasant things and all beautiful things around you that are perceived are offered to Jerimji. However, it is said that one's altar should be built in accordance with one's means. This contributes to a more powerful spiritual energy and the accumulation of merit and wisdom. If one is of humble means, a simple rock or a mound of grain will do. One simply imagines that the substances symbolize the enlightened beings. The importance is the mental attitude. There was once a great Tibetan master, a great Tibetan yogi, by the name of Je Kumbhampa. He had renounced all worldly possessions, everything. His altar had only a stone to represent the Buddha and some clay bowls that he had made himself that he used in order to offer water. But his motivation was pure, and thus the merit of his altar and offering was great. The important thing is attitude and contemplation, not the physical objects that are used.